It's good to be with you again, and I'd like to talk to you about some things that are very important to us and our faith on this occasion. Job asked a question in Job 14:14, if a man dies, shall he live again? And in response to that question, I recall John chapter 2, beginning in verse 17, where Jesus cleaned out the temple. And a lot of the things that happened then, people don't remember. They remember him making the scourges and driving out the cattle and the sheep and turning over the money changers' tables. But sometimes the lesson that Jesus was trying to teach his disciples is lost because we don't read it all, don't pay a whole lot of attention. But let's begin with verse 17 of John chapter 2, where it says, his disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for thy house shall eat me up. And the Jews therefore answered and said unto him, what sign showest thou unto us, seeing that thou doest these things? Jesus answered and said unto them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. The Jews therefore said, 46 years was this temple in building, and wilt thou raise it up in 3 days? But he spake of the temple of his body. When therefore he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he spake this, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. Now I've got to ask you the question, which would be easier to accomplish? The rebuilding of the temple in 3 days, which took 46 years to build, or the resurrection from the dead? As impossible as it might seem, and as it would be for us, it would be easier to rebuild the temple in 3 days. To raise the dead is something that was unheard of by so many people, and there are so many people who just cannot conceive of it today. I have seen dead bodies. I know how different they are from living bodies. It's just the appearance and the chemical composition. There is no hope in under normal circumstances for the resurrection of a dead body. It is bound for corruption. But Jesus talked about the resurrection for himself, for his own body. We must, as Christians, be ready to give an answer for the hope that is in us. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15, Peter says, but sanctify in your hearts Christ as Lord. That means make up your mind that Jesus is the boss. Being ready always to give answer to every man that asketh you a reason concerning the hope that is in you, yet with meekness and fear. When somebody asks me, David, why do you believe in something so far out like the resurrection of the dead? I am supposed to be ready to give an answer. And sometimes that question is asked with the intent of ridiculing or belittling my faith, but I still am obligated to give the most honest answer as though it was asked, the question was asked by the most honest and sincere and humble person. And so we want to kind of dive into that to find out why we believe that Jesus was raised from the dead. Now, the resurrection of Jesus is the focal point of our faith. The hope that we have springs from the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. In 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3, Peter says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his great mercy begat us again unto a living hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Without that resurrection, there is no point of our being here. There's no point for our Bible study. There's no point in our faith. Now, if Jesus was not raised bodily, we have no hope of a resurrection from the dead for ourselves at the end of time. Again, in this lesson, we want to consider some of the reasons that we believe in the resurrection. We want to consider the divine testimony, that is the testimony that God gives us that we might believe. Now, belief in the resurrection rests on testimony. The testimony of witnesses, and we have to ask our question, are they credible witnesses? Are they believable? And the testimony that they present, is it strong enough for us to believe and accept? And is it clear enough for us to understand? So, again, we want to consider the question, was Jesus raised from the dead? Now, let's get more exact with reference to our question, our proposition. Number one, there are three unavoidable facts that we must confront in studying this question. First of all, Jesus died and that he was buried. Secondly, on the third morning or before, his body disappeared from the tomb. And the third fact is that his disciples came to believe firmly that he was raised from the dead. Now, where did all this come from? The exact issue has reference to the last two facts and may be stated by these questions. Did the body disappear by a resurrection or by some other method? Did the belief of the disciples originate from the fact of the resurrection or from some other source? Where did they get their faith? Well, let's consider these questions one at a time. First of all, how did the tomb come to be empty? There have been a lot of theories advanced by mankind over the ages, and let's consider some of them, because even though there are many people who don't believe that Jesus was raised from the dead, all must admit that the disciples believed in it and that the body was missing from the tomb. Nobody disagrees with that. Nobody can reasonably disagree with that. Well, here are some of the explanations that men have advanced to explain the empty tomb. The first explanation is that the disciples came and stole the body. This was something that was used by the priests to quash the belief in Christ. In Matthew chapter 28, it says in verse 11, "Now while they were going, behold, some of the guard came into the city and told unto the chief priests all the things that were come to pass." They told the priests about the resurrection of Jesus. "And when they were assembled with the elders and had taken counsel, they gave much money unto the soldiers, saying, Say ye, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we slept. And if this come to the governor's ears, we will persuade him and rid you of care. So they took the money and did as they were taught, and this saying was spread abroad among the Jews and continueth until this day." Now, first of all, this theory of the disciples stealing the body, it would be contrary to the character of the disciples, who were men who preached honesty, who lived their lives in the open before all men, had no secrets, and they just simply would not have told such a lie that cost so many millions of people over time their lives. Secondly, we look at 2 Corinthians chapter 7, and we find that the disciples... 2 Corinthians chapter 4, we find that the disciples themselves paid quite a price for their testimony. Paul talks here in this passage about the gospel being a great treasure. And he says in verse 7, "We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the exceeding greatness of the power may be of God and not from ourselves." Now, what Paul is saying is, we in our fleshly bodies carry about this great treasure of the gospel. He refers to the body as an earthen vessel, going back to the attack of Gideon against the Midianites, where he took 300 men to fight the thousands of the hosts of the Midianites. Each man carried an earthen vessel with a light in it. And in order for the Midianites to see all 300 lights and think that there were thousands attacking them, those earthen vessels had to be broken. Now, what Paul is saying is for the gospel to be seen, that is the gospel that he is teaching, the one that he is preaching, to be seen by others, by those around him, that his earthen vessel had to be broken. He had to give himself. He had to break himself in order for that to be seen by others. Well, anyway, he says, "We are pressed on every side, yet not straitened, perplexed, yet not into despair." Verse 9, "Pursued, yet not forsaken, smitten down, yet not destroyed, always bearing about in the body the dying of Jesus, that the life also of Jesus may be manifested in our body. For we who live are always delivered unto death for Jesus' sake, and the life also of Jesus might be manifested in our mortal flesh. So then death worketh in us, but life in you." What Paul is saying is, we have given our lives, we have put our lives at risk for the testimony of the gospel. Now, Peter and John, Paul, we look at the other apostles, James, who was beheaded for the cause of Christ, all they would have had to do to save their lives is say, "Well, we made a mistake. We were lying. We were wrong about the resurrection of Jesus. We're not really sure." All they have to say is, "We're not really sure." But they were willing to die before they contradicted their testimony, which gives credence to their honesty and the strength of their belief. Now, if they had stolen the body, would they have that kind of strength of belief, that kind of conviction, that kind of conviction to die? Who would die for something that you knew to be false? Well, that's a theory that really doesn't hold any credibility with anyone. Some have argued that the Jewish or Roman authorities moved the body. And the question arises, if they were going to move the body, why place guards there to protect the body, to see that it wasn't stolen? And when Peter and John began to preach in the streets publicly that Jesus was raised from the dead, why didn't they just go and get the body of Jesus and show it to the people to show that Jesus wasn't raised from the dead? If they had moved the body themselves, they could have done that. But they didn't. And the reason is they didn't move the body. Look at Acts chapter 4 and beginning in verse 13. After Peter and John had been arrested, it says, "Now when they beheld the boldness of Peter and John, and had perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled, and they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. And seeing the man was healed, standing with them, they could say nothing against it." They could not deny the healing. This was a man who had been lame for 40 years. People of Jerusalem knew him. They knew who he was. They saw him every day. And they knew the condition of his legs. But now here he is standing with the disciples, and they cannot deny the healing. It says in verse 15, "But when they had commanded them to go aside out of the council, they conferred among themselves, saying, 'What shall we do to these men? For that indeed a notable miracle hath been wrought through them, is manifested to all that dwell in Jerusalem, and we cannot deny it.'" But they could have denied it. They could have the idea is not so important that they deny the miracle, but they deny what the miracle represents. And all they would have had to do is go get the body of Jesus paraded around Jerusalem, and we would never have heard of him. It would have been the end of it. That would have finished everything. So we reject, and most people of any reason reject, the idea that the Roman or Jewish authorities moved the body so that it wouldn't be stolen or taken by the disciples. Some have advanced the idea, the notion, that the mourners went to the wrong tomb. There are a lot of things wrong with this. Number one, the body was still fresh. The tomb was still there. And they're going to the tomb on early Sunday morning. It was probably not the first time they went to the tomb. They probably went on Saturday as well. But they went to the tomb on Sunday morning, early in the morning, to anoint the body, to avoid the stench that would arise from the decaying flesh, and they found it empty. Another thing that's wrong with that is that it was a private burial ground. And if they could not find the tomb, Joseph of Arimathea or Nicodemus, who helped with the burial, assisted in the burial, could have shown them where the right tomb was. It's just a kind of a silly argument to avoid the real issue of the eyewitness testimony of the women and the disciples who saw the risen Christ and the empty tomb. An interesting theory that has been advanced recently, and not only by some recent motion pictures, but also in some novels and stories of the past, is that when Jesus was hanging on the cross, he didn't actually die, that people just thought he was dead. This theory is called the swoon theory. At least it got that title during the 18th century. Back in those days, there was a great fascination with epilepsy. And you may have remembered the story called The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. It was about a man who thought his sister had died, and he prepared her for burial and put her down in the basement. And in the middle of the night, she comes knocking at his door. Well, she hadn't died at all. She had an epileptic seizure that made him think that she was dead. And there was another story called The Open Window about a man who'd prepared his wife for burial and had laid her out on a table in his log cabin. And in the night, a cougar had jumped in through the open window and drug her body out. And when he killed the cougar, he found that the cougar's ear had been bitten off, was in his dead wife's mouth. Well, she had an epileptic seizure, and he thought she was dead. And there's a fascination in fiction and in society about epilepsy. And so somebody came up with the idea, the notion that Jesus was having a seizure of some sort on the cross, and they just thought he was dead. And then there is the idea, the notion that Jesus took some kind of a drug that mimicked death. And there are drugs that people can take now that will make even the most careful expert think for a moment or two that the individual is dead. That doesn't last very long, at least doesn't last long enough to bury the individual. And we have to note this, that those kinds of drugs were not known, much less available during the days of Jesus. And so that's kind of a silly argument as well. Others argue that he just fainted from the fatigue and the torture, and he was so weak and so near death that the disciples just assumed that he was soon to die, and they took him down from the cross, and they were mistaken. He revived and got better. But that, again, misses the point. Jesus was scourged, which many people did not survive. He was nailed to the cross. He was on the cross for approximately 6 hours during the heat of the day. And when the soldiers came to examine the bodies of Jesus and the two thieves, they break the legs of the two thieves because they were still alive. But they didn't bother with Jesus because they could see he was dead. And then, just as an afterthought, one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and out came blood and water. And in doing a little bit of research, one of the things that I have read about that is that the blood and water coming out together would be indicative of the spearhead piercing the pericardial sac and perhaps even the heart. Jesus was dead, and when they saw his body hanging on the cross, dead as it was, they made sure by stabbing him with a spear. Well, what do we do with the faith of the disciples? Their faith rests on the appearances of Jesus to them after his death, that is, the alleged appearances. The question is, were they real? These appearances took place over a period of 40 days with a great deal of variety as of the time and place. There are at least 10 distinct appearances of Jesus that are named in the Scriptures. He appeared both to groups and individuals, 500 at one time. We look over to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and we read in verses 6 and 7. Paul says, "Then he appeared to above 500 brethren at once, of whom the greater part remain until now, but some are fallen asleep. And then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles. And last of all, as to the child untimely born, he appeared to me also." Now, the reason for Paul writing this in 1 Corinthians, they had begun to question the resurrection in the church in Corinth. And Paul is simply saying, if you want to question the witnesses, question them, question us. There are over 500 brethren who saw him at one time. Most of them are still here. You can write letters. You can go and see them and ask them what they saw. And they'll tell you. And they'll all tell you the same thing, that they saw the risen Christ. And so the testimony was not just limited to a few people who were deranged by sorrow and sadness and great loss, but it was kind of a cross-cut of the society. People who had followed Jesus, some who had not been followers of Jesus, saw the resurrected Christ and were willing to give their testimony. Some have suggested that the disciples' testimony arose from false sightings or hallucinations. They thought that they were seeing Jesus, but what they were seeing was just really a product of their overactive imaginations. But this is impossible. And the reason is because of the nature of hallucinations. Hallucinations occur generally in people who tend to be vividly imaginative and of a nervous makeup. Jesus appeared to all sorts. Most were hard-headed skeptics. You remember when the women came and told the disciples in the upper room that Jesus was raised from the dead? They put him off, imagining or thinking that they were crazy women, that they were just overcome with grief. They were convinced that Jesus was still dead and still in the grave. Hallucinations are subjective and individual. No two have the same exact experience. In other words, there'll be variations that come into play depending upon our past experience and our expectations. And so here's Jesus appearing to all these people, and they all have the same basic report of what they saw and what happened. Hallucinations usually occur only at peculiar times and places. The power of suggestion once again comes into play. Hallucinations occur over a long period of time with some regularity. Jesus stopped appearing abruptly after 40 days. And the disciples said it was because they saw him ascend up into the heavens in the clouds. And again, hallucinations must be desired events or at least expected. And this, none of this was the case with the appearances of Jesus. Well, what about the appearances of Jesus? The disciples were skeptical. They were persuaded against their wills that Jesus came forth. They did not believe that Jesus was raised from the dead. Mary went to the tomb to anoint a dead body. She thought Jesus was the gardener. That's Mary Magdalene. She came and she spoke to Jesus, and she, supposing that he was the gardener, demanded to know where they had taken the body. And when Jesus spoke to her, she said, "Rabboni," that is to say, teacher. She knew who he was. She knew that he was the Son of God and that he had been raised from the dead, and that his teaching concerning the resurrection was all true. Then the others refused to believe her story. Look at Luke chapter 24 and verses 10 and 11. Luke chapter 24 and verses 10 and 11. Now, talking about the women who came to the tomb. Now, they were Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them told these things to the apostles. And these words appeared in their sight as idle talk, and they disbelieved them. If someone came to me today and told me that they had seen Elvis Presley walking through the mall, I'd kind of laugh because I'd know they're trying to be funny. Elvis Presley sightings are pretty common, but most of us, that is, most of us mature individuals, understand that it's a joke. And this is almost how the disciples took their testimony. It was a joke, but it wasn't a funny joke because it was one that came up from their great sorrow, their sadness. Then there's Mark chapter 16 and verses 9 through 14, where it says, "Now when he was risen on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, from whom he had cast out seven demons. She went and told them that had been with him, and they mourned and wept, as they mourned and wept. And they, when they heard that he was alive and had been seen of her, disbelieved." They just discounted what she had to say. It wasn't convincing to them. When he did appear to the disciples, finally, they thought they were seeing a ghost. Well, why? Because they knew he was dead. They saw his dead body. It couldn't be him. In Luke chapter 24, beginning in verse 36, it says, "And as they spake these things, he himself stood in the midst of them and said unto them, Peace be unto you. But they were terrified and affrighted and supposed that they were beheld a spirit. And he said unto them, Why are ye troubled? And wherefore do ye question and arise in your heart? See my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit hath not flesh and bones as ye behold me having. And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while they still disbelieved for joy and wondered, he said unto them, Have ye here anything to eat? And they gave unto him a piece of broiled fish and a honeycomb," the King James Version adds, "and he took it and ate before." You know what the great power of that is? When a hallucination eats something that you have there at your house and then leaves, that which he has eaten is still there. But that which Jesus ate, when Jesus disappeared, it went with him. Jesus was there and he ate before them. You remember the testimony of Thomas when he said, "Except I put my hand in his side and put my finger in the print of his nails, I won't believe." And Jesus appeared to Thomas and he says, "Here is my side, here are my hands. Put your hand and your finger where you want to put." And Thomas fell down in John 20 and said, "My Lord and my God." Well, the appearances of Jesus were real. They were convincing. The disciples were convinced. So the only possible explanation that is offered by the apostles for the empty tomb and their strong belief in him is the resurrection from the dead. We turn over to Acts chapter 10, and we'll finish reading verses 39 through 43. Now there it says, "And we are witnesses of all the things he did both in the country of the Jews and in Jerusalem, whom also they slew, hanging him on a tree. Him God raised up the third day and gave him to be made manifest, not to all the people, but unto witnesses that were chosen before God, even to us who ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead." In other words, We are witnesses. We saw these things. And our belief rests upon the testimony of these good men who gave their lives for their testimony of the resurrection of Christ. We hope that you'll carefully consider these testimonies and that faith will rise up in you as well, so that you might believe that Jesus was raised from the dead, that you might believe that He is the Son of God, and that you might be ready to give answer to every man. Come worship with us. Come study with us. We'd love to have you. Thank you very much.